Hello and welcome back to Sounding It Out, a podcast dedicated to audiology and hearing health, brought to you by Signia UK and Ireland. I'm Julia Van Hastin, your host and head of audiology at Signia. These podcasts are Signia neutral so that everybody with an interest in hearing health or audiology can benefit. This is the third episode of a mini-series about dementia and hearing loss, which we are launching weekly during the International Alzheimer's Month. Our guest speaker for this series is Dr. Barbara Weinstein, who is an author many times over in the field of geriatric audiology and is very well known for her work. Dr. Weinstein's research interests include dementia and social isolation, person-centered care and quantification of patient-reported outcomes. During our first episode, Dr. Weinstein introduced dementia and its overlap with hearing and hearing loss. During our second episode, we highlighted some things that audiologists can do to help here and now with the prevention and treatment for dementia. During this final episode in our series, we will explore the audiologist's rehabilitative role. Bear in mind that we can't view any of the episodes for this series as a standalone episode because the topics are connected. So please do also listen to episode 1 and 2 if you haven't done so already. Dr. Weinstein, I'm really pleased to have you back again for our final episode in the series.
It's wonderful to be here and to be working with you on such an important episode. And hopefully these episodes are meaningful to people in the field and outside of the field as well.
We've talked about the fact that both hearing loss and dementia are on the rise and that hearing professionals will increasingly be called upon to inform or participate in the intricacies of diagnosing dementia and managing the symptoms exhibited by persons with dementia. Let's start by connecting once more hearing loss, dementia, and the audiologist for our audience.
Well, I think that in terms of the connections, a start would be educating healthcare professionals about the importance of adequate hearing when doing any of the examinations, the diagnostic tests, and also when doing rehabilitation. It's very important that hearing is optimized. So there are different ways of assuring hearing. Some would argue that before anybody undergoes a neurocognitive test, they should have the hearing tested. Well, when doctors are diagnosing dementia, they oftentimes it's on a rush basis. They're not going to recommend that somebody go for a hearing test at the time of the diagnostic process. But what we can offer is how to recognize when people, behaviors associated with hearing loss, so they can recognize it. We can also suggest that they just assume in people over 80 that there's a hearing loss and that they use a personal amplifier. And so these are some ways to make sure that the hearing is not going to invalidate or make the diagnosis of dementia more likely. Those are just a few important tips in terms of the role. And then also, we need to counsel professionals about how to communicate with people with dementia, people with hearing loss, people with dementia hearing loss, and wearing masks.
I see and hear a few important things to highlight. Firstly, providing audibility is important, and that is, of course, with hearing aids, but in the first instance, even just with personal amplification is important when we're talking to these individuals and ensuring that they can hear us. We also keep coming back to the theme about addressing social isolation and loneliness. We also see the theme of person-centered care being really important, and then back to that education piece. So onto the topic of audibility, and we've talked about this a little bit before. What is the rationale for optimizing audibility?
So I think there are a number of reasons why we want to increase or optimize audibility. And one of the things is that listening effort is a huge issue. And when people have dementia, they have to put a lot of effort into focusing so that they can really understand what people are saying. When people have a hearing loss, they have to put a lot of effort into understanding what people are saying. But at least with hearing loss, we can make sounds louder so sounds are more audible. And if the information is going to get up to the brain, there's not going to have the cognitive resources diverted. So that's one really important point for improving audibility, reduce listening effort and listening fatigue. Then a second one, of course, is to make sure that the cognitive tests that are administered are, the results are valid. So we have to make sure that our patients can, or the psychiatrists or psychologist patients can hear the questions so they can provide the correct answers. Also, the optimizing audibility is important because social engagement is one of the interventions for people with dementia, and also music appreciation is another one. So there are a number of reasons why optimizing audibility is important.
I know that you have some acronyms that include tips for addressing hearing loss and tips for addressing isolation and loneliness for interprofessional teams working together to improve the quality of lives of persons with dementia and hearing loss, which makes it a little bit easier to think about the tips for addressing hearing loss and for addressing social isolation. Do you mind sharing those for us so that we can remember them easily?
Sure. So I just came up with these acronyms just because I think that they're easy for people to remember certain things. And a lot of health professionals don't really think in terms of hearing and what they can do. So the first acronym that I came up with is HELP. Healthcare professionals should help. They should provide hearing assistance or make sure their patients have hearing assistance. Make sure that if they're interacting with a patient with, they always, an older adult, say, do you have a hearing loss? Do you have your hearing aid on? Very, very important. Engage. Engagement is important. So the E would be engage with family and friends. L, critical that people look at the person when they speak, because you can access information from the facial expressions, from eye expressions, and of course from the mouth. And also finally, P is for position yourself away from noise. Another acronym relating to loneliness and isolation is EASE. And again, here we have an important role to play, and for healthcare professionals, E is for engagement. Encourage our patients to socially connect. That's part of social prescribing. Address hearing loss early. According to the Lancet Commission, we should be addressing hearing loss in midlife. In the Alzheimer's UK brain quiz, this is designed for people in their 50s. So that's it's kind of a lifestyle approach. So addressing hearing loss early is important for seeing a hearing professional, especially if there is a diagnosis of dementia, because we can assist with the management. And then E is for ease listening effort and cognitive load by improving audibility. So I think that these are all connected. And I have another one for ears, but I think ease and help are a good way to start.
So I'll definitely remember that moving forward. Help and ease. Coming back to the fact that we keep seeing this overlap with addressing hearing loss and isolation, and how both are on the hearing healthcare professionals' radar, it is interesting to see how these interventions can reduce the burden associated with dementia, but also optimize safety in the home. So in our second episode, we talked about the holistic case history and the holistic approach. And one of the things that links into safety came up, namely asking about falls history. How can the audiologist assist with the safety aspect within the bigger multidisciplinary team?
So what's interesting is now more and more audiologists are getting into telehealth. When in management of dementia, there are a lot of risk factors, and there's a big concern about falls. And there's a very, very big concern about safety in the home. And in going through a lot of these risk factors, I noticed that there are certain risks that are not mentioned and that are ear and hearing related. So for example, we have to make sure that people connect hearing to falls. So if you shouldn't be walking and talking at the same time, very, very important. And I remember speaking with a nurse practitioner, and she was saying that she was taking a patient for physical therapy, and she was talking to him as she's taking him to physical therapy because he had walking mobility difficulties. I said, you really shouldn't be talking to him and walking with him at the same time, because interestingly, there have been a few studies showing that on a hip fracture floor, the most prevalent chronic condition is hearing loss, not vision, but hearing loss. Another thing in terms of safety is in the home, a lot of people who have hearing aids take their hearing aids off. And when they take the hearing aids off, then they're not hearing some of the warning signals in the environment, because remember, hearing is important. It's a safety sense. So people should be encouraged to wear the hearing aids at home. If not, you need to get some assistive technology. So for example, a doorbell ringer so the patient can hear the door. More important, a kind of a tactile or visual alerting system when there is a smoke alarm going off. Because there's a lot of danger with sometimes people with dementia turn an oven on or a stove and they forget to turn it off, and then the smoke alarm. And smell, olfactory sense, is affected in people with dementia. So it's kind of important also for highlighting the smell and making sure that there's some kind of an audible signal if there's some kind of a carbon monoxide, which you don't smell. But the falls is very important because people with dementia are at higher risk for falls. People with dementia have a higher risk of hearing loss, so that we should probably do home visits, but we should also ask about questions about safety in the home. And it's really, really important to emphasize, wear the hearing aids, because a lot of people take the hearing aids off when they're home. Wear your hearing aid when you're at home, because you want to hear this the safety warning signals. But if you don't, build your home so that it's a safer environment that you're living in. An audiologist tend not to think about safety in the home, but more and more with telehealth, it's interesting. I've done some telehealth, and you can look around and you could see what's in the environment, and you can point out things that could be changed very easily.
I agree, and that's really why I asked the question, is because previously I certainly wouldn't have thought about asking about safety in the home environment. And also with the development of telehealth, you can also argue that it may not be easy for a patient with dementia and hearing loss and potentially other health problems to come into the hospital for their appointments. But actually, we can make it easier for them and put them at ease by doing these appointments in their own environment where they feel safe. So that's a really interesting conversation that I will have with colleagues moving forward. Now, we've referenced person-centered care a few times throughout the series with the assumption that people just know what that means. I think for our listeners that may not be in the health industry or may not be clinical professionals and that may not be familiar with the term, shall we give them a quick definition of what person-centered care means?
Well, person-centered care means that the person or the patient is kind of the driver of your conversation, and they're the ones who talk more than the audiologists. And the audiologist needs to educate the patient about conditions, give them all the information they need, and then the patient makes the decision about the next step. So automatically, typically what's happened in the past, and it's also in medicine, it's kind of the white coat syndrome. The doctors tell the patient exactly what to do and don't ask for the input from the patient, don't educate the patient. But in person-centered care, the person is the decision maker. The audiologist gives them information, for example, a decision aid with all the different options, and then the patient, understanding what the options are, will say, you know, I think I'll start with this. So it's really having the patient in the driver's seat and us educating. So that may make sure that the patient is ready and has the self-efficacy to do something to help themselves. So it's really, really important that we're not the ones who say, I'm looking at the audiogram and you need a hearing aid. It's more important you describe the results, get their input, and then offer the options, and then they make suggestions. And this is going to be a facilitator to use of hearing aids if the patient is ready, has the buy-in, and has the self-efficacy.
So that was a fantastic definition, very comprehensive, and in layman's terms too. So hopefully everybody understands that. Now, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. If we are led by the patient, which, you know, that's what person-centered care is all about, for individuals with dementia, that might have some complications, I guess, where we might need to alter our patient-centered care approach a little bit. What's your recommendations for what we need to do differently, because we do want to remain patient-centered, but how can we just alter our approach a little bit to accommodate somebody that's got dementia?
Well, it's really, really important to have a family member available, because in terms of persistence of hearing aid use, it's the family member or caretaker or caregiver or the carer, as some people call it. I think in Australia and England, you call people carers. They're really part of the solution. So they have to help. And the caretaker, the family member, has to oftentimes be of assistance to make sure the hearing aid is in the ear, whatever. But what's interesting is the answer depends upon the stage of the person in terms of dementia and their experience with hearing aids. So what we have to do is individualize care. No two people are the same. And what we have to know is what their hearing aid history is and what the status is in terms of dementia. And a recent study, for example, came out at a Mayo Clinic that showed that people who have dementia and are given hearing aids are less likely to be able to persistently use hearing aids, which is why it's really, really important for earlier intervention. So the people who have hearing problems who have been using hearing aids for a while, they can tend to manage the hearing aids on their own. Older people who have hearing loss and no dementia aren't experienced and are not experienced, those are going to be the new users. That's fine. But if you get somebody who is at a more advanced stage of dementia, introducing a hearing aid is going to be problematic. And even if you have a family member, oftentimes the patients are going to take the hearing aid out. They're not going to keep it in. When I first started working in a nursing home, I was very young, idealistic. I was going to save the world. I was probably about 27. And I said, I'm giving every single patient here in the nursing home, the long-term care facility, I think you referred to that here, hearing aids. And I was consulting and I was teaching and I would get phone calls. Barbara, we're hearing whistling. We're hearing whistling around here. Let's go. So the patient put the hearing aid in some crazy space, and the person who was cleaning up the room took the hearing aid, wrapped it in a sheet, and they couldn't see it. Then another person said, well, a patient just swallowed the hearing aid because they confused, for example, a cashew nut with a hearing aid, and they swallowed the hearing aid. And they called me, and they said, what are we supposed to do? I said, well, I'm not a GI doctor, but I think you better get them to a GI doctor. So the stage of the dementia is really, really important. And sometimes a hearing aid is not going to be right, but we can use personal amplifiers. We can use devices that are more user-friendly. Again, in this Mayo Clinic piece, they did suggest that we have to really, to encourage persistent, actually it was Naylor. He said that you have to make sure to design hearing aids for people who have dementia and are older going forward. And the hearing aids are not really designed that way, but we have to make them so that there's that functionality so people can use them, given the fact that people are living longer, more and more people are going to have cognitive issues.
Yeah, that's an interesting point there about the design of the hearing aids, because we talked about this yesterday. We were talking about the fact that hearing aids are getting smaller and smaller because people don't want them to be visible and they are concerned with what they look like. But actually, when you think about the individuals that we've been discussing, they want something that's easier to handle. They want something that's easier to get in and out of the ears and to change the batteries for. So that's another interesting point that you raised too. Well, my next question is, I know that you have an interest in subjective outcome measures, and I wonder if you think that there's a place for this when we look at individuals with both hearing loss and dementia.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that the pure tone audiogram serves a purpose and the self-report serves a purpose. And also the informant report serves a purpose. So I think we need to have a combination of approaches. And for some people, for example, people who have more severe hearing loss, they're not going to give us a valid estimation of their hearing, but the family member will. But according to a lot of research studies, even the English longitudinal study, Davis was the one responsible, they revealed that subjective report of hearing, just asking a question about how do you think you have a hearing loss, not even going into the more detail with the hearing handicap, those measures of self-reported hearing loss do relate to dementia. Also, objective measures do. But subjective measures from the Mayo Clinic relate more to dementia than pure tone tests relate to dementia, but the pure tone tests relate to cognitive scores on cognitive tests. And that's important because the cognitive tests, you have to be able to hear. So that's really an audibility question, not whether or not you think you can hear. It's really the absolute ability to hear. So there's a place for subjective and objective. And now there's talk in the field about subjective cognitive decline. And that does relate to actual dementia. So the subjectivity is very, very important. In terms of memory, if you ask somebody who has dementia, as we said earlier in the first podcast, do you think you have memory difficulty? And they say no. And then the family member says yes. That's an indication. That discrepancy is an indication. So there's a place for both.
So in your experience, when we bring it back to the rehabilitation theme that we've got for this episode specifically, for our audience, who is the key people that audiologists should be interacting with when we are talking about rehabilitation with a patient with dementia?
So the family member is important. Wherever you are in a practice setting, the receptionists who are taking patients in, they should be knowing about hearing loss and dementia. Even the nurses, the nurse practitioners, we don't talk about nurse practitioners or physician assistants, but more and more they're the ones, at least in the United States, I don't know about here, who are interacting with the patients. So they have to know more about hearing. But in terms of just on a more personal note with patients who have a family member who are using hearing aids, a facilitator, a critical factor is the family member being on board with helping and having the efficacy to know how to help the patient use the technologies. And I should add, cochlear implants is another issue. There are a lot of successful individuals who have some sort of cognitive decline and do have cochlear implants. And you could see that in some of the studies that they do not progress from mild cognitive impairment to dementia. They stay at the same level. So a cochlear implant, we have to make sure to educate individuals about that as well, especially health care. If you're in a long-term care facility, they have to know about those technologies as well.
My last question for you is, in your opinion, what are the next steps for research in the field of audiology, dementia, and rehabilitation?
I think, and I don't know if this is the most important step, but I think it's really, really important that audibility be an issue when, as part of the diagnostic testing for dementia diagnosis, and doctors are not going to do a hearing screen or hearing test before they end up testing somebody. So I think that we should advocate more and teach people how to use personal amplifiers, how to respectfully ask a patient, "Now can I try this?" And if they see a difference when they put a personal amplifier on the patient, just you keep the personal amplifier on the patient. When doctors are diagnosing people with dementia, just assume that if their person is 80, that they have a hearing loss and make the adaptations. In terms of audiology and hearing, we have to get at the root cause. Can we determine whether or not hearing loss actually causes dementia? And do hearing aids actually reduce the progression from mild cognitive impairment to dementia? We have to keep in mind at this point that hearing aids, and this is from Jenna Littlejohn, who's in Manchester, she suggested that what we're doing with our technologies is addressing the symptoms, not necessarily getting at the root of dementia, because dementia is this physiological condition, but we're dealing with the symptoms. So the hearing aids do, or cochlear implants do, help people engage more, do keep people connected, and they make people safer. So in that sense, we should get the word out why it's important to intervene, but we have to intervene earlier, especially in midlife, according to the Lancet Commission report. So the studies now, I mean, I know what the Hopkins is coming out with the report on whether or not, in fact, hearing loss causes dementia. We shall see. I'm not so sure they'll be able to get at that. But one of the biggest things is we have to make sure that marketing now is used to say, you know, hearing aids cure dementia, hearing loss causes dementia, so get a hearing aid. We just have to watch our language. And when patients are coming in and they say, "I want a hearing aid because I heard that it can fix me and prevent me from getting dementia," you have to be clear. No, the hearing aids are important for communication access. It's important to keep you engaged, and that's really why they're important. We can't be misleading with our patients, mm-hmm. And I think that's not necessarily research, but that's kind of education that we have to make sure that all audiologists are educated and not misrepresenting the role of hearing and the role of hearing aids. But the cause and effect link is the key.
Mm-hmm. Lots of food for thought there. So, many thanks to you, Barbara, for talking about the audiologist's rehabilitative role. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too, and it was a privilege and a pleasure to meet you and to get to know you, and I feel like we have now a special bond in terms of our love and passion for this area of helping people live full lives and live well with good hearing.
Absolutely, 100% agree with you, and looking forward to some more conversations. Agreed. After this too. Today we've highlighted once again that we still have a long way to go about educating on the link between brain health, social well-being and hearing. We also heard about the importance of audibility, promoting social interactions and the importance of person-centered care for individuals with dementia. If you are interested in any further information on the topic, the Alzheimer's Society website at alzheimers.org.uk is a great resource. If you found any of what you've heard today helpful, please tell your friends, family and colleagues so as many people as possible can share the knowledge. And if there's a topic you think we should be covering, drop us an email to the address on the show page and remember to subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts from so you don't miss an episode. This is a Fresh Air production by Annie Day for Signia UK and Ireland. Until next time, goodbye and thank you.